This show is not a financial advice. Bitcoin and shitcoins involve risk. Consult with a professional before investing. Now it's time for our sponsors. HealthyBookCrate.com. HealthyBookCrate.com is a bi-monthly book subscription box that guides subscribers to better understanding the importance of wellness and nourishment for the mind and body. You will get to read, you will get to sip and support. Every month we create a box around women's fiction book and our selected theme. Each feature title is a prominent recently released first edition women's fiction novel, usually signed by the author. Each box includes loose leaf tea or coffee that ties into the feature story as well as our chosen theme. We work with small artisans to inspire you to experience new brands and different types of tea and coffee. Every box includes self-care products, bookish goods made by small artisans. We work with brands that are prominently women-owned, promote wholesome ingredients, and send positive messages to our subscribers. The September subscription started at $58, while a six-month subscription started at $170, while a yearly subscription started at $332. The whole website is absolutely fabulous. I recommend you guys to check it out, check out the products. The site is healthybookcrate.com. Healthybookcrate.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out bitthegeeks.com also. Are you looking for podcast music? Or just music in general? Or whatever music? Maybe you want to jazz onto something. Look no further. Go on Twitter at Holovirus. Holovirus and his friend create really epic music. Really, really epic music, not just for podcasts. If you're looking for something to jazz out onto, or something new to commission, you should show him a DM or an ad at him. For more information about his rates and the commission prices, DM him for more information.
Is a very crypto, or no, did I say crypto? Now you can kick my ass. I'm sorry.
Whoops!
Guten Abend.
Yo, what's up?
Everything fine here. I'm sitting here. I'm looking forward to record another episode with you.
Yeah. Ich habe eine desperates Bier mit Tequila.
Sehr, sehr gut. Ein Pisswasser.
Und eine Pisswasser.
Pisswasser.
No, Pisswasser.
We would not consider desperados beer. I mean.
Is it?
Like, no, it's not.
Like a weird shit.
It's like, oh my god, does it even have corn or something?
I don't know.
Doesn't it have corn? I don't drink, you know? I don't drink at all.
Well, this show is supposed to be for people crazy enough to smoke weed, do barbecue, and drink beer.
I think the only thing I'm gonna do, I'm doing is do the barbecue. My life is actually pathetic, I guess.
Sounds good.
My life is pathetic.
I'm just dying here because of Corona. BRB.
The beer.
Oh, man. It's like the fucking cops come on to me. And like I was just out in fucking Slovakia. Oh, man. Wuhan. Oh, yeah. The Wuhan clan. So, yeah. Welcome to my show.
Thanks,
it's great to have you here again, man.
Yeah. Last time was quite fun with Tanuki. And we figured that he's actually male, I guess. It was like a super funny episode, so I guess we should do it. Yeah, it's a good idea to do it again. Yeah, absolutely.
He totally shot the joke that he's being a guy.
Yeah. I think he lost quite a few followers for that.
Rip.
I don't know.
I kind of like this beer. It tastes weird, but in a sense that I doesn't really... like. Maybe I feel the tequila on it, but it's not really a beer tasting beer, but more like... I don't know. It's just like it's a weird monster.
I guess we And when I say we, I mean the people from the country that I'm from, which I'm not gonna say which country it is, but we have a quite long history of making beer, would not consider those Salitos and Corona and whatnot beer. Actually, you would like, yeah, they might throw you out of the country if you say that. So no, man, this is basically, it's like something like a
they're really religious about beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like last time I brought like a couple Hungarian beers for Candle.
Yeah.
You know, Candle Hater on Twitter. He's a cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I brought him like three regional beers. One from Sopron and the two from the Borsod County.
Okay.
One was the Soproni, I think there was the other one is a Borsodi, and the third one I think was a Kőbányai. Like all three distinct beer with totally different flavor profiles.
Okay, and he liked them?
He loved it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, frankly, a beer is something great. I actually like, yeah, I have been consuming quite a large amounts when I was still in university, but at the moment, I'm like so busy. I cannot afford anymore. I'm actually not drinking at all any alcohol. And
don't worry, I don't drink that much neither. Only no, maybe on this podcast. just for the laughter or some.
Yeah.
Added extra that I can bring out of probably. So yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we had a topic, didn't we?
Yeah. We want to talk about how Bitcoin make you become a happier person, and it could also
a happier person.
This is crazy, right?
Like, how are you a happier person? Am I a happier person? This is like a really interesting question I've been wanting to ask myself. Like, am I happier? Am I having a more happier life ever since I got into Bitcoin? I think maybe the answer is yes, in a sense that like, I don't know.
For me, it was actually super hardcore, because when I entered the Bitcoin space, I recognized that everything is super fucked. And that gave me quite a depressing time, I had to say, because it's like all your view of the world, like all of a sudden collapses, and you recognize that you're like working for pieces of paper that are worth nothing and that can be printed anytime in large quantities. And that was a super depressing time of my life. As I said, I went into
when was
Bitcoin,
it? In 2018, 17?
No. Yeah. 2008. No, 2017, like early 2017. In my holidays, I read books lying on the beach, on the pool in Florida, reading books about Bitcoin. So people were crazy, thinking I am crazy. when I was reading those books, and then I was like starting to question the fiat world, and that's something that is like that's a scary thought or a scary experience. If you really do the thought experiment and think it to the end, then you recognize that all the world is like everybody is motivated by purchasing or by trying to accumulate as much as those sheets of papers as possible. And that's like that was a super scary time of my life. But then as soon as you understand it and you make your peace with the situation, for me it was super super relieving to stack my sats and know that I have something that nobody can basically take away from me. And since I'm falling down the Bitcoin rabbit hole deeper and deeper, I recognized that it really made me a more complete and a more relaxed person. And I mean, for me, it definitely had a positive aspect or a lot of positive aspects to it. But the beginning was super scary, super scary. I don't know how
you kind of like totally hit a nerve in this one, at least for me, like. Like how, I mean, yeah, like, I just kind of went back on memory lane, and like, you know, like thinking what happened to me along the way and why this probably happened to me that I got into Bitcoin. while we're, you know, starting to think more about it.
Yeah.
And like, this is gonna get pretty deep topic now, probably. So like, I don't know if I should talk about it. Probably there's no way back right now. Let me just drink a bit.
Go for it. Go for it. I'm Sigmund Freud, you know.
Okay. Let's make this show as deep as fuck as possible. Okay.
Let's go for it.
So I can say I had a really pretty shitty life.
Well,
up until 2017. In 2010, I got out of middle school, and I went into the world of higher education. I started off with a course in a university where there was this course called mechatronics, and I started off this BSc basically. And at the time, my family started falling apart. And also one of my school principal died at that year in September. Yeah. And I already had like a ton of other issues kind of piling up on me back at that time. And I slowly kind of, you know, descended into, you know, this kind of the depression. What a lot of people would be like, you know, if you meet other people and they say they're depressed, they probably, it was something like that.
And been there.
And, you know, my family split. My father went off for a better life to the capital. And they started fighting over the house. And things were really not working out for me at the time with university neither, because all the drama at home and the problems I was living through in 2010 wasn't really giving me space, you know, to focus on my studies or something different. And
I know.
I went to the part where I actually had physical pain in my chest that I wasn't able to continue, keep going into the university, that to attend classes, and I had to go to the hospital in order to like seek treatment about it, because one of the doctor who I used to go to actually changed my medication at that time, because I was in childhood diagnosed with ADHD, and I took Ritalin for that for many, many years now, and he stopped the medication and started changing me onto bipolar meds basically.
Okay.
And
Yeah.
And like, and that was like going downhill from there. When I stopped Ritalin, I was getting more depressed. I just, at that time in life, I wasn't able to find a way out of the situation that I was in. And I was feeling quite desperate in order to, you know, get out of it. And I just didn't find any way out of that whole situation. So I kind of just closed myself into my little own world. I was at home for like 1 year until the next semester started. And I went into a software engineering course, again, at the same university. And okay. I wasn't able to do anything at all there because I wasn't taking the medication. I was taking other type of weird shit that this doctor kept prescribing me for more than 4 years. And this was like up until 2013, when I ended one of my relationship, and then at that time I kind of like, oh yeah, like up until that time, like even in 2012, I was just only at home. I wasn't doing anything at all. I was on an online game called as Garry's Mod, doing Half-Life 2 roleplay servers and doing communities and all kinds of bullshit. And I was creating, you know, these imaginary worlds that I wanted to be in that kind of felt more idyllic for me to be inside. And I just wanted to create a world that is more interesting than the one I was in. Probably that was my reasoning. And like, nice, more deep. Like making some profit off of it or something. But in the end, 2013, that breakup happened. And then by the end of 2013, I was looking for a way out of my situation. Because I was like basically at home for 3 years now, not doing anything at all. And then in January 2014, my psychiatrist told me that ADHD doesn't exist. That was a red flag that happened. Up until then, it wasn't as obvious. And then I started desperately looking around and like thinking like, what's wrong here? And I changed a doctor, but I was so retarded that I didn't go and look for a doctor who could have helped me with my situation for until like a good year after that point on.
Yeah, I mean, those things are really hard to find a doctor that takes you serious and all this kind of, I mean, this is finding
there is a psychiatrist specialized hospital in Budapest that is actually specialized onto AD/AD only. And it existed ever since 2010.
Okay.
I was just touching around in the dark, basically. I was totally blind about it. And then I started again university with my English BA in 2014. And I kept going on. And I was without my medication, basically. And I kept failing in the first semester and the second semester. And in the second semester's end, I finally got together with this really amazing doctor who was really up on his practice. And it really got me back on Ritalin again. But it was like a really rocky start, because for 4 years I wasn't taking this thing at all.
Yeah, I think if you stop taking it, you can run into troubles. I mean, I heard stories that people were really miserable because of that, because they stopped taking it.
Yeah, I mean, ADHD makes people more spontaneous. They're more impulsive. They are more aggressive sometimes. They cannot focus onto things. I can't focus onto many things also. I mean, the only thing I can focus in my life is my computer. That is like a magical machine here functioning in my room that I don't know how it works, but it captivates my attention so much. And the people on it. There's like a window for me into the rig world.
It's nice. I mean, everybody needs to have something that he can focus on, and then that he can put all his effort and all his love into somehow.
Yeah.
And if you don't have something like that, then you are bound to lead a miserable life. And for me, and it sounds sort of stupid, but Bitcoin is a thing that can give back a lot. Yeah. If you're dedicated, and if you're educating yourself, it will reward you incredibly. And I saw that happening.
It's like it's really difficult. It's like when life kind of feels like it makes it impossible for you to proceed on, and then you feel totally powerless over it, you just start descending into this darkness.
Yeah, and I think our generation has the problem, the millennials in general, they have the problem that they have no realistic chance unless they inherit a large wealth.
Yeah. Obviously.
No realistic chance of ever making a living, a decent living. I think in the United
Absolutely
States, it's
particularly
none. Bad. They are like, this is the first generation that will be in a worse situation, economic situation, than the generation before them. So, yeah, I think we need to change something. And we said it in the last episode, and I think, it's worth saying it again, but this is the peaceful revolution. Bitcoin is the peaceful revolution that could really... that changes lives for the better, and that can even change the world for the better. Unless you're profiting big time from the fiat monetary system, unless you're a central banker, a banker, or a politician. But if you're not one of those three type of people, then you will be better off using Bitcoin or stacking some sats. Absolutely. Yeah, that's my conviction. Yeah. Absolutely.
It was just like a really, really, really bad phase in my life. In the past, at least, but from 2014, when I started university again, all it was just English literature and culture and things like that. But I was like, kind of progressing already. I felt like I wanted to do something in life, and I was dedicated towards finishing this course. And like I was, slowly seeing like the light in the end of the tunnel. But actually, it was so far away that up until 2020, I didn't really see it. I didn't get out of the tunnel until my thesis was finished and I graduated from this course here. And ever since then, in 2019, I was like, really at the end, it was like a roller coaster that I was going through when I got into Bitcoin and going down the rabbit hole. And I'm finally understanding everything, why it was happening. And it there's no words for it. I don't even know how to explain it to you, man.
But you fell down the rabbit hole in which year was it?
2017. That's when I started digging. That's when greed started pulling me into shitcoins. And Basically, I was like in this whole world, like wine exists up until the big bull run happened in 2018. That's when I
That
started,
was.
philosophizing about the fact like why value exists and how it gets created. And
Yeah.
that's when I started going down like this little path here. And
Yeah.
I was really shocked that when I later in 2018, 2009, yeah, 2019, I started reading stuff like the Bitcoin standard and all these other stuff, that things came back to me about things that, how would I say, did I manage to philosophize about, did I manage to go through in thinking about what is going on with the world without ever reading those
Yeah.
books. And although I wasn't really Bitcoining in 2017, I was more like totally shitcoining. And then still up until like December, I was still like, quasi shitcoining. But then there was a turning point in July in 2018 when I figured out that it was all about Bitcoin only. And that was
Yeah.
when I started like, transitioning from shitcoins to Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, most of the shitcoins, the only use case is to make the founders be able to accumulate more bitcoins. That's the
Pretty
only
much,
use case
like
for the shitcoins.
look at for example Zuko Wilcox. What does he do
Yeah.
with Zcash?
Yeah, absolutely.
He has a mining tax, steals from people who do proof of work, and then he goes off to the supermarket to buy all the good quality foods. You know what? I hope that shitcoin crashes, and I hope you're gonna go to the budget aisle after that. And he's gonna be buying all the
Yeah.
on sale items from the expiring section.
Yeah,
Those
probably.
boxes in the
Yeah.
Lidl and the Aldi, but they put all the crappy food that is about to go bad. I hope he's gonna be feeding on that stuff because he deserves it. He's a piece of. I just gonna before we
Yeah,
get banned from
I
some
see.
place.
Yeah, I see your point. It's also like it's at a certain point it becomes sort of useless discussing or trying to convert shitcoiners, particularly if they're unpolite or you're like throwing things at you. Then you're like, you know something? I don't have to take that. Like I just block them relentlessly. Like two tweets that are not appropriate, then they're gone. I block them. And that's good because then we have more satoshis for the nice people, you know. That's fine. I can perfectly live with that. Like Satoshi said, if you don't get it or you don't understand it, I don't have the time to explain it to you.
I regret ever shaking that asshole's hands at the ZCon one. If I could just walk back, I would
No.
have kicked him in the nuts.
You did that.
I actually met him, and he was there, and he was, you know what he did? He was there, and he was saying that I was on the Cypherpunk mailing list where Satoshi was sending the mail. I was like,
Yeah.
I was just tilting my head, like, okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, this place, oh my God. I mean, tons of scammers and like just focus on important people. I think I even had once a list I think I should update it where I was really writing down all the people I blocked in Twitter and to make it public so that people have a better signal to
That
noise
would be
ratio.
pretty good.
Yeah, really. And the list is as long as my follower list, or even longer. I mean, really, I block relentlessly, because my lifespan is too short to argue with trolls on Twitter. Really not.
Yeah.
Not gonna do that. Yeah, no.
So like
But it's funny. It's funny because I was also going to a very like depressing phase in my life once during a time I was doing a PhD. And in that time I was at that time I was really I didn't like my job very much. So last time I said, yeah, I was there because I wanted to get rich quick. That is basically not the complete truth. Actually, what I wanted to do is or what my goal was to become independent and to not to be able to decide for myself what I want for my life. And I guess at the moment I'm at the point, and we're talking 3 years from now, yeah, from the time I took the decision. Within 3 years I was more or less able to achieve that. I was in a horrible or in a bad job. I was not happy. My family situation was also not very good, although nothing compared with the situation you went through, obviously, but it was we had some issues. And I just stacked those coins. I just hodled those coins, and I saw that all of a sudden, not only my economic situation was improving, but also my life, because I was able to change jobs. I was able to negotiate with my boss better, a better salary. I was becoming way more. My self-esteem increased. So many things were playing out in a positive way, and that is only possible if you break this chain that is a fiat currency, and if you are starting to work towards your own financial sovereignty. And I'm really, I'm impressed how fast it worked with Bitcoin. I was, like I said, 2017 more or less I started, and now it's 2020. I mean, 3 years. This is, some people are working their whole lives to become financially independent. And I mean, I'm not extremely wealthy, but I could live reasonably well for an extended period of time where I would not have an income at all. And yeah, I'm super happy with the situation, how it played out for me. And as just like you, I was into shitcoins at the beginning. And I had Ethereum. I sold the Ethereum today. I was reading about it. I sold it before they mooned hard.
So I never owned Ether.
Yeah, it was super funny. Super funny. I mean, I could have sold it at 1,000, but I sold it at 300. But in the end, nothing of that. I even owned Ripple once. but yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. my coming out is super bad, but yeah.
I think Lord Jesus, David Schwartz, the Riptor.
It's horrible. But the cool thing is I exchanged all that shit coins, sometimes even with profit, for BTC. And that's fine, you know? That's fine.
It's only fine, yeah.
Yeah, many people got ripped off big time. I mean, if you buy Ethereum for 1,000, I mean, that's like, oh my God, that's horrible. Only imagine you I don't know, sold your car in order to stack Ethereum. That would be the worst decision ever. And but people did that. And yeah, so the only coin that I can really promote without having a bad feeling would be Bitcoin, the only one. And actually, it's the only currency that I can promote without any bad feeling, because all the fiats, they're going to go down as just as Ripple does and just as Ethereum will do. Yeah.
Just a second. I had to turn on the fan. You're probably going to be able to hear it.
It's so hot there.
No, it's actually cold, but the beer and everything. Give me a second. I need to grab some towel that I can fucking...
Rub your balls in, you want to say?
Yeah, sorry, I'm back now. Just a second. sorry about this break.
Everything is fine. Got no worries.
You're gonna be cutting this part out totally. Tequila beer and Africola. That is a really, really interesting pair.
Oh God.
The taste, aftertaste I have after that with the tequila beer and the Africola actually tastes really interesting.
Yeah, again, I cannot say anything positive about this tequila beer. I'm sorry.
I have conviction.
It's like, it's the shit coins of beer, if you want. Oh boy.
Oh my God. Okay.
I'm not going to let you get away with that. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's like a Scholle. I think we would call it a Scholle. Yeah, if you mix some two things, two liquids, to become another drink, but it's not a beer. Then I mean, we had the Reinheitsgebot, and obviously, if it doesn't have the Reinheitsgebot, I mean basically that it can only contain water, yeast, and like the very basic ingredients of beer. I think it's like three ingredients. Oh my God, I'm a loser when it comes to beer. But everything that has more ingredients than the four ingredients that were like defined by some monks in the 15th century, then you're out. This is not a beer anymore in Germany. Yeah.
Also note for our dear listeners, I turned on my fan because I'm dying in the heat. So I'm really sorry if you guys are going to hear some fan noises. Okay, so where are we? I think somewhere around... Okay, you know, let's just steer the topic a bit.
So, yeah, yeah.
So how did your friend circle start adjusting ever since you got into Bitcoin?
Actually, that's funny. Not much changed. I'm not this very crazy evangelist in my spare time. When I'm with my friends, I'm like, I'm just totally normal dude. Sometimes I would probably rant a little bit about money printing and that this is a little bit unethical.
The moderate, the Bitcoin moderate.
You can really lose friends if you are trying to evangelize them. The best thing to do is just drop some references once in a while, and if they see if they check the price or if they stumble upon an article in mainstream media, they will remember you and come back to you. Everything else is not good because you will lose friends. And actually, friends are as valuable as Satoshis. It's true. I mean, yeah, you select your friends. You have to be really careful. You have to also invest in relationships. And I would not ruin a friendship in order to try to convert somebody into becoming a Bitcoiner. Yeah. I would not do that. Not my best, my BFF, my best friend. He doesn't own any Satoshis. And I'm fine with that. I mean, I cannot force it onto him. So that's fine. He's a nice person, and I know a lot of people that are doing much worse things or that don't deserve my time. I tried to introduce him to the topic. I probably even helped him out with setting up a wallet and whatnot, but he's not into it, and I will accept that. And yeah, I think that's important because you don't want to become this crazy weirdo that is all the time only talking about Bitcoin. You really have to be careful. This can impact your life for the worse. I mean, whether what I'm doing online in Twitter, that's a completely different topic. Yeah. But if I'm talking in person with people, I would not try to evangelize them because no, it's not worth losing a friend.
I also have an interesting perspective on this. I never really had any real life friends up until I got into Bitcoin. And like, for me, the space kind of totally changed. Like what kind of a human I am, like what I do, how I think. And ever since I got into Bitcoin, I can tell you now, and I have a lot more friends than I previously ever had. And I'm really, really glad about it. Like, all these telephone numbers that I could call even in the middle of the night and they wouldn't, you know, yell at me. Knowing that, you know, if I would ever be in trouble or whatever else, I could probably call them and, like, ask for help. And this is really interesting for me. Like, how did I get this
far? Yeah, and it's true. It's there, for me, it's like more this Bruce Wayne and Batman thing, right? I mean, I have my normal life and my work, and I think you are right. Visiting a Bitcoiner once, but for me it's also important to, like, I don't know, go out hiking, cycling, kayaking with some guys in real life, obviously, because I need physical activity sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, This is something important for me. I also increased a lot my fitness in the last time because I have to, during this whole Corona crap, I had to go out. I had to, like, move my bones somehow. And that makes more fun if you have some people around you. But I do understand also your point where you say it's tough to talk with people that are not into Bitcoin. They sort of don't understand if you're going down the rabbit hole too fast, and the chances are high you will lose them, or you might risk losing yeah. them, they will not be able to follow.
Like I mostly what I kind of notice is that usually I meet new friends on meetups. Like I met Silent Lamb at Hackers Congress, and then we went together to the Guns and Bitcoin meetup, which was really amazing. Also,
okay.
He's also a really cool guy.
And the Guns and Bitcoin conference was
in Switzerland in February, and I think I got Corona there also.
Brilliant. No, but okay. What was this about? Because I read about it, but I didn't understand the concept, or I did not dig deep into it.
We went to Luzern in Switzerland with a bunch of guys.
Okay.
There was this guy. What's his face? Obibos. Yeah.
Okay.
Who set up this really amazing event in Switzerland, and we all went there from different parts of Europe, and we shot guns. It was fucking amazing. I never shoot guns in my life before. Before that part.
Okay. Okay.
There was like an AK-47, an M, hold on, an AR-15, Winchester, a Remington shotgun, and there were pistols like Swiss & Wesson, Glock 10,
okay,
a Magnum, and a Raging Bull. And like we were popping so many rounds. It was so insane.
Yeah, but that, I mean, bitcoins and guns, for some reason, they go well together.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's all about the protection of private property and protection of your life against, you know, unknown dangers.
It's true.
You have to be prepared for something that you don't know about.
Yeah, this is true. This is something that I see much more in the United States area, where this is sort of a normal thing. In Europe, we are still... the people are still believing so much in the government protecting you, and I think in the United States this situation is completely different. People are like way more into self efficiency and self protection. In Germany or in Europe in general, we don't have that so much. But I guess it is always good to like relate more to yourself, rely onto yourself much more than that average person does. Usually if the shit hits the fan, they're all calling for the government, and nobody like wants to like take their own actions to improve the situation or to change the situation for the better. I guess what a big benefit that I see in Europe over United States is you don't have to like arm yourself to the teeth in order to ensure that you will be
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, but have you ever been to Czechia before?
Yes. I have been there. Yeah.
You know, Czechs own guns.
Let me quickly try to make my point. In Europe, we can avoid some draconian action by some government simply by moving to another country. It's super super easy because we have freedom of movement, so we can actually live in any country. If for instance I like the tax situation in for instance what is it, next is Spain,
Portugal.
If I like the tax situation in Portugal more, which is much better than, for instance, in Germany, then I would just move there. And this is an option that many or the people in the United States, for instance, they don't have that. They cannot just move around.
Yeah. They said like it's like 200,000 euros investment you need to put into the Portuguese economy in order to receive a tax exemption for a couple years. But you need to also move there physically and be there. Have your home address within that location.
Yeah, I mean that is something that would be totally feasible or doable for me. I would not have any worries doing that. Or even better, Malta or something
really
like that.
It's really great. I mean, so Malta is also like the money laundering capital of Europe.
Yeah, it's true. And that's the cool thing about Europe. You know, you can find the proper country for your purpose.
Every proper country. this is so diverse here. Yeah. You don't find this in the US.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Fed will come after you no matter what. But basically, here it's like, yeah, good luck finding me in Malta, you know, like, obviously. This is, and therefore, the people are in the United States, they are much more like, more self-protection, whether I think in Europe, we have more this like, okay, if I don't like it here, I move somewhere else. This is something that always gives me a lot of peace of mind, because if I don't like a place, I just move. I mean,
you can't do this in the US. You would have to go to either to Canada or to Mexico. But I don't think any of the two options are really, really that tasty.
Yeah, and I guess they have the exit tax, right? I
mean, even the exit, oh my God, it's like the government steals like a percentage of your total wealth. Like, how fucking crazy is that? The US government is such a tyrannical government. There's no words to describe this.
absolutely agree.
One of my ex lecturers have been talking to me about the exit tax. Because if you're talking about Bitcoin investments and how he was like thinking about, you know, moving things around, but he was only interested in traditional financial products. But he'd been wanting to move a lot of money out of the US. But he didn't want to do it because of the exit tax, actually. And it was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again, the Bitcoin is super hilarious. In the last episode, I already told you the story. Yeah, if you buy in Bitcoin, I mean, the first time I was on holiday in Florida. You buy Bitcoin in Florida. You load it onto your ledger or whatnot. And then you fly back. Do you declare it at customs? Well, I mean, the Bitcoin is already in the country you're traveling to. You know, it's like in the internet.
It's not even there. I will tell you a spoiler. I mean, yeah, it's in like, a third jurisdiction. You know what the sovereign individual says when about storing your money? Is that be in a country that is not the origin of your passport. And then, like, what was the second one? Probably I drank too much beer and I'm kind of mixing it up right now. But I think the second or the third one was about, you know, keep your money in a third jurisdiction.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the Bitcoin is something that is really absolutely impossible to regulate on a global scale.
Pretty
because
much.
It's like, it's try switching off the internet. I mean, it's impossible. It is impossible. We will never see a global effort to like ban Bitcoin, because there will always be one country that enables you to want to attract wealthy individuals. So yeah, I don't see any way you would need a global consensus in order to ban Bitcoin. Bitcoin has an advantage.
I don't think even a global consensus could ban Bitcoin, because there will be still individuals who would keep using Bitcoin, and then it would keep failing. And then the black market would just, you know, keep taking over all over again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the only thing that ever achieved global consensus is Bitcoin. Try copying that. It's impossible.
It's impossible.
You can't. It's impossible.
Nobody can do this. No, nobody.
Yeah. The United Nations cannot even agree on not killing people in Syria anymore. You know? And that's like the least thing. Like, there should be not even on a very obvious thing they can agree on. Like, we should end the war in Syria. No, not even that is possible in the United Nations. You want to tell me that, like, all countries in the world
Nations is just a sham establishment where countries just, you know, wave their dicks around. And they don't even do anything at all, because there is the Security Council, which is, like, the veto power over the entire United Nations. And then they can't do anything, because it's totally pointless for all those people to be there. It's just a show off. It just, you know, it's just a circus. These African countries and smaller nations and micronations, you know, have a representation in the United Nations. And what do? They can't do anything at all. Because if the first thing they're going to say something bad or propose something bad that passes the floor there and goes to the Security Council, it gets vetoed. It's game over.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
It's pointless.
I mean, we see that all the time.
The entire United Nations is just pointless.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, but I think, yeah, Bitcoin can solve a lot of problems. Whether we can do that today, this evening, is a different topic. But
one evening fixing the world also... with Bitcoin. That's a very interesting speed up.
We can at least philosoph a little bit about it. What I also wanted to add regarding becoming a happier person, once you are into Bitcoin a while and once you hodled a while and once you made the first sweet profits, you will be able to travel. And that is something that gave me a lot of positive impressions.
That's nice.
Because we you see other countries. And you see how the people are living there. It really broadens your perspective. And you come back home and you think, like, people would complain, oh man, it's hard finding a parking lot, or the oil prices were increasing or whatnot, or the steaks became more expensive in the supermarket. And then you remember back your holiday in Africa where you saw like horrible things happening, or really poor people. I mean, really poor people. That are really scavenging in the trash for food. And then you recognize how lucky you are to be able to listen, for instance, to this podcast, and how easy you can impact the world to make a better and to make it become a better place. Like really try educating people on Bitcoin. And I think there is a lot of people doing an awesome job. Paxful, for instance, is a cool company that I really like the work. It's like helping people, particularly in African countries, to onboard Bitcoin, because those are the ones that need it most. We don't need Wall Street bankers using Bitcoin. Those guys will come anyways, because as soon as they recognize there is a profit to be made, they will be there. That they are not stupid. But the poor people, the people that really try to make the ends meet or try to even survive, those are the ones that can benefit the most from Bitcoin. And that's why I was getting private messages, direct messages in Twitter from any sort of, I don't know, like companies that want like some information or some hints. And I also got messages from guys from Africa, random strangers with poor English. And I would rather help those guys because they can benefit way more from this information than any Wall Street banker.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I think this is like, it levels the playing field. Obviously, poor people will not be able to stack as many sats, but if you are doing it early enough, and you can anyways come out and have a decent advantage over many other people that are just plain ignorant. Yeah. So
some people can't even stack sats though. That's like, it's like, okay, we won the life lottery, so. But
it's true. It's
what
true.
About people it's who are seriously in deep poverty, that they like eating pug in the Philippines?
Yeah, I mean that there is also something that I see happening, and there was a decent discussion in Twitter about it. As soon as we see the paradigm shift from fiats to Bitcoin, basically the Bitcoiners will be the ones that have to like take the hard decisions, and that will have to try to make a positive impact on the world. And
I mean, there are so many opportunities there to do, like just to improve their life, also like creating factories there or whatever, to employ people. And it doesn't have to be skilled jobs, just unskilled jobs, and those can also provide probably a much more cheaper production for like a company. That produces goods, keep paying the workers there. That ultimately improves their life.
I think what would be a very nice thing, what I would love to see is, for instance, Bitcoiners giving out microcredits to people that really need it, and basically the Bitcoiners would be then in a future that is probably not so distant. Become something like a creditor and supporting the good cases or good causes. But then we have to look in the mirror. All the Bitcoiners have to look into the mirror and ask themselves whether they are like decent persons.
Yeah.
And that is something, that is a question that sooner or later many of us will have to face. And I think that's something you should not push so much. You should really, at a certain point, you will be in a situation where you can live comfortably. And what do you do then? What do you do? How do you change the world to become a better place? That is something that I'm thinking a lot about. And I think writing in Twitter, bashing shit corners, can be one
One
small
way of
thing.
doing that or
Can be
achieving
one
that, yeah,
small thing
basically.
to make the world a better place, right? But there must be other things also. I mean, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Because you become a bank, basically, right? And you become the very thing that you're
Basically.
fighting against, I guess.
And then you're gonna be the one, repopulating Bitcoin. Probably not.
I don't know. This is like, there are always two sides of the medal, and one should, like, yeah. I mean, everybody is very euphoric about Bitcoin, but obviously, with great power comes great responsibility,
Basically, yeah.
as Peter Parker's granddad, I guess, was already said. Yeah.
This is also interesting with the microloans. Those actually work in some South African countries, and they've been really successful there in these regions. So I think it would be a really great
Yeah.
product if it could somehow get created, that microcredits would be possible to be created, and then they're like some good business plan behind it. I would totally get behind that.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because many what hinders a lot the progress in those countries is that sometimes the men take the money from the women that are trying to work or like trying to do good things with the money or invest it, and just waste it. So the women need to have the possibility to receive money and keep it stored safely, and that is like something that you can achieve easily with Bitcoin, but it's difficult to achieve that with cash or with a bank account, because women are for some reason very in a bad situation in the in those
Yeah.
in many countries. So I also see that many of my friends, I have friends in, for instance, United States and Africa and Latin American countries. All of them do have potential Bitcoin use cases, and but anyhow, they seem not to realize that. Probably except of people in Venezuela, they obviously see the advantages of Bitcoin. And also, I read a lot of about people in Turkey recognizing that their currency, is going down in value a lot. But we are, for instance, in Africa, I know of, people in Africa, they just recognized that the food in the university would like become worse and worse in the
Because they're trying
cafeteria.
to profit off from, trying to make a profit even from that. Although,
No, no.
or
It's
not.
actually worse. It's actually worse. They simply cannot afford
Oh,
high
shit.
quality food anymore because
'Cause they
the
priced
inflation
out
is
of
running
it.
away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at a certain point, it becomes really the difficult
Oh,
situation where people
right. I
are
was wrong.
like
Yeah.
have to like sort of stick to the hard currencies in order to be able to afford food. And
Even worse if
yeah.
there's inflation going on and they cannot even do that.
Yeah,
Like in
you
Venezuela, for
cannot.
example.
Exactly, you cannot. For instance, in Ethiopia, I know that you cannot enter the country with large amounts of cash, dollars, or hard currency, because they would confiscate it. So what you have to do is you have to find ways how, if you're, for instance, working in Germany and you have a family in Ethiopia, if you want to support them, you have to wire them the money via MoneyGram, and the government takes its share. No, it's not MoneyGram. I think Western Union or what is it called? They are like charging
Yeah.
20% or something. And after that, you have to even bribe the guys in Ethiopia in order to get the money out of the bank account, so that they are not confiscating it. So Bitcoin is really, it is absolutely necessary for this for African continents to be implemented and to spread the word there. It's much more important than in Europe or in the United States, where the people those are luxury problems that we're trying to solve with Bitcoin, like buying the latte macchiato on the upper east side. That's like, this is not the initial Bitcoin use case. The initial Bitcoin use case is to bank the unbanked and to be a store of value that is confiscatable. And I think that is something that we have a lot more potential in African countries, and the Europeans and the United States people are just the tip of the iceberg. We have a long journey ahead in countries that are way worse financially than we are, I guess. Yeah.
So,
and of course, yeah.
How do you see how real estate does emerge out of this somehow?
Oh, that's also an interesting thing. I think it already happened, only that they're not called citadels, but gated communities, and we see them all over the globe, everywhere.
Especially in the US, I see a lot of these places also, like with the latest drama that was in, I think was in, which city was it? Where, you know, the two lawyers came out of the house with guns, a woman and a man, and the female was like holding the pistol like crazy. That was also a gated community, like a small citadel for people.
Yeah, I think at a certain point it's gonna get interesting for the hodlers, and many of us will move to, or will have to move to protected areas, whether you want to call those citadels or not, just because of security issues. And this can even like self perpetuate to a point where you have private security companies taking care of whole areas, and you won't rely anymore on the police. And this is interesting, because what you're doing if you're investing in Bitcoin, you're basically defunding the police, right? I mean, the police is being paid in dollars. So I don't see that happening in the United States. But if you're running in a small country...
Don't tell this to BLM, because they're going to start buying Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, then you're looking at a point where you have a larger capital accumulation in the citadel than in the country around. And at that point, you will be basically the ruler of the country. Yeah? If you're talking about a small country, for instance, I don't know, some small
Could
African
happen,
country.
Yeah. It's not out of the question.
And, yeah, I think we will see that, and we will also see some opportunistic countries, like, for instance, I don't know, Malta or something, that they would like to jump on that train and also benefit from that and really do very, very Bitcoin-friendly legislation. And as soon as you have that, you will attract more Bitcoiners. I think Switzerland is also doing that. And then at a certain point, it becomes just a matter of labeling that things, right? Like Citadel or Bitcoin-friendly legislation. But we will see that in the future. And actually, I hope it's not necessary, but I think it will happen inevitably. This is the first time we have a global hard money, and there will be interesting things will be happening.
How do you see?
Future.
Is it possible that... That malicious countries might appear that offer Bitcoiners good opportunities, but they would try to abuse their presence in the country?
Well, I mean, Bitcoiners are like rats, right? You can catch the first one, but as soon as the word spreads, no one is gonna eat the poison anymore, right? I mean, that's why I love about Twitter. It's like the immune system of the Bitcoin space. You can pull off some scam once probably, but as soon as the word spreads, the topic is over. The Bitcoiners are very hostile and very suspicious, and Bitcoiners are hard to fool. Many have quite a good technical understanding, and I don't see that happening. I mean, Yeah, you can always construct horrible scenarios or scary scenarios, but in the end, I think it's a matter of sanity, of the people's sanity, if you want to go into a shady third world country that trying to attract Bitcoiners.
Oh yeah, or, princes telling you like come to like Nigeria or Mozambique,
exactly.
And then bring your Bitcoin because we needed to build our palace for princess.
Yeah, exactly. This is something I don't see happening. What I could believe or what I would like to see is a very crypto or no. Did I say crypto? Now you can kick my ass. I'm sorry.
Whoops.
No, Bitcoin and a very Bitcoin-friendly legislation, for instance, in countries like Costa Rica, because they don't have military. How cool is that? Yeah. If you have a citadel there, I mean, they have no fucking military to invade this place. So it's like, yeah, this would
crypto.
Be my prime spot. My prime spot for a citadel. Yeah.
Crypto. Oh,
man. Oh, you will have to cut so much of the stuff I'm talking.
I understand, but I'm keeping the crypto part in.
No, don't do that. Now you can put pressure on me. Now you can blackmail me for the rest of my life with that. Oh my god. That was a mistake. Oh boy.
Okay, let's steer the topic a bit. So how do you see, do you know any Bitcoiners who picked up a loan in order to buy Bitcoin?
Yeah, I know some.
I did also, actually.
I did that.
Cool.
And I don't regret it. Yeah. I did that when it was at when my favorite cryptocurrency was at 6,000 something euros, and I took out a quite decent loan, and I tweeted about it, which was probably a very wise decision from an OPSEC perspective.
Whoops.
But it's okay. I mean, the thing is, you can actually, if you're taking out a loan to buy Orange Coin, then you are doing something that is a time travel, right? You buy Bitcoin when it's cheap, and you pay back. You pay back the then expensive Bitcoin or the loan with a depreciating fiat currency, which is a brilliant move. They call it carry trade at Wall Street. It's a common thing to do, I guess, in trading. But many people are scared of taking out a loan to buy Bitcoin. However, nobody would be scared to take out a loan to buy, for instance, a house, a car, or to study at the Ivory College. They would say, yeah, that's a reasonable investment.
Yeah.
But if you're buying a Bitcoin, you're a reckless crazy. Yeah. Which I don't agree on.
Probably,
yeah.
For me, I also did like 1,500 euro worth of credit on student loan, and I also bought Bitcoin with it. But I mean, my mother needed some money, so like that's not really the full amount, but I'm kind of happy because I didn't have to pay taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, the central banks want us to take out loans. I mean,
obviously.
That's why they have negative interest rates, so I do them the favor. I mean, I consider that my duty as a citizen. Yeah. Okay, that's probably
how do really negative interest rates really go on in Germany? You really have to pay less back than what you pick up?
No, they're not handing those down to the customer.
The fuck?
I mean, you can. For sometimes you will find such offers, but only for small amounts of money, like for like 1,000 euros, you would get.
That's also
like
good. Just buy Bitcoin.
It's fucking awesome, yeah. I mean, you take a 1,000 euro loan and you pay minus 0.4% interest. Basically, you're getting paid by the creditor to pay buy Bitcoin with it. And
what would be really interesting if you know, even if you're not paying the loan, it would still have a negative interest rate.
Yeah, this
and you don't even have to pay back the loan. It was so easy to do.
Yeah. I mean, this is the tip of the iceberg. What will actually happen is, as soon as banks will be able to invest in bitcoins, I think right now there are some legal issues preventing them. But if they would be able to do that, regardless whether it's via derivatives or by actually buying bitcoins, they would be very foolish not to do it because they can circumvent the negative interest rates they would have to pay to the central banks if they deposit money there.
Yeah.
So this would be the major avalanche because this capital is a huge amount that's a huge amount of capital. At the moment, only a few crazy hodlers are stacking sats like crazy. But as soon as we're getting like the institutional investors on board, or even central banks, we will see the game will change completely. We will add zeros to the Bitcoin price. And that is something that I'm like really curious about, because as soon as you are receiving money as a bank to take a loan from the central bank, which is already the case, and you will be able to deposit or to buy Bitcoin with that money, this is a total no-brainer. Yeah, particularly if you consider how much money printing is going on at the moment. So as soon as this mechanisms become clear to banksters, then we will see a massive influx of capital into Bitcoin, regardless whether it's via derivatives or via buying actual Bitcoin.
I'm pretty sure about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a dam break effect, because the first bank starts it, they will be able to outperform they will be able to outperform their competitors, and then we are getting to the point where central banks or pension funds have to do it, and at a certain point we will see countries competing for satoshis, and that's the scary end game of Bitcoin, I guess. Yeah.
So what was this thing with luxury watches when you...
Yeah. I'm also like, I was also like recently informing myself about like what are other potential hard assets that you can buy. Bitcoin is obviously the most hard asset you could buy, but many people recently were complaining that, for instance, Rolex watches would be something stupid to buy because it's just bling bling, and they're like not they're like just to show off and have no real value. But that's actually not the case, because Rolex watches, particularly some models, are also very scarce, since Rolex is not producing many of those. And I guess also some other brands like Audemars Piguet or Vacheron Constantin, all those very high-end luxury watches. And that's something funny, because the prices of those watches also go up like crazy. And why is that? It's also because wealthy people or knowledgeable people are buying those watches and selling them on the gray market for a much higher price than they bought them. And this is funny, because at that point, Bitcoin and watches go well together. If you are able to buy, for instance, a Rolex Submariner, you would be able to you buy it directly at the retailer. The thing costs like 7,500 euros, US dollars. And if you sell it at the very day you bought it at the retailer, you would be able to earn like to get 10,700 euros for it.
Wow.
So where is the delta coming from? The delta is coming from the people. They want to buy the watch now. You have a waiting list. Those watches are very scarce. You have a waiting list of years. At the moment, it's even worse, because Rolex wasn't able to produce during the Corona crisis. So this is something that many or few Bitcoiners know about. Bitcoiners are they're usually very focused on their orange coin, and they don't consider a lot of other investments scams. But in this luxury watch world, there are also quite interesting mechanisms at play that also can be traced back to the fact that central banks are constantly printing money, and therefore the prices of scarce goods are going up. This is obviously a rabbit hole for itself. It's like just as Bitcoin, you have to know a lot of things about it, and you have to get immersed somehow. But as soon as you understand the mechanisms, and as soon as you know which watches to watch out for, you can really like make a killing, like earn 3,000 euros just by spotting the right watch somewhere at the retailer, buying it and on the spot, and then selling it on the black on the gray market with an epic profit, because simply the people want to have it at the moment and they are willing to pay a premium for it.
What really prevents Rolex from producing more of those?
They were like they were shutting down their factories because of the corona virus for 2 months, and also of course it's like very complicated to build a watch with a certain amount, a certain level of quality. Those watches are obviously very well made and therefore very finishing, polishing, machining precision is very, very high. The quality is incredibly high. Therefore, they cannot produce an incredible amount of those watches. Their amount is limited. They are very sought after, and that makes them a very scarce asset, just like Bitcoin is. Obviously, Bitcoin, I have to say, don't get me wrong, Bitcoin would be the better investment, because you have to be a professional to make a profit with a watch. But with Bitcoin, you don't have to. You just have to stack Satoshis. That's all. I mean, it's a no-brainer. With watches, it's way more difficult. However, it is also possible. And, well, the watch you can wear on your wrist, you cannot do that with Bitcoin unless you, like, somehow knot a open dime on your bracelet or something. That would work, I guess.
Open diamond? What? That's like a new design option for Novak.
I think American Hoddle did that, or not? Didn't he make like
a? Madex did like the one out of silver. I mean, white gold and then completely gold.
Yeah, but I think that's like from an OPSEC perspective, not a good thing to do. But whether you want to wear a Rolex everywhere is another thing for that debate. Yeah, it's true. I mean, probably lock them away, the Bitcoins and the Rolex. But yeah, point is, there are a lot of things that are scarce, much more scarce than dollars and euros are, and those things go up in price. And watches are one, Bitcoin is obviously another. Yeah.
All right, I think we need to wrap up.
Gosh, I have been talking now like 1.5 hours in a row.
1 hour and 23 minutes we're at. So yeah, I think we reached the end of this podcast for today. So I don't want. You want to say anything last words? It's like before an execution happens. I put you into the padded room or something.
Tell my mother that I love her. Yeah. Oh. No. Any last words? No. As always, it was a pleasure being on your podcast, and it was fun discussing some weird aspects of Bitcoins that I think were not covered so much yet, and I hope we will see each other in person once. I guess we should schedule that.
Hell yeah. We're gonna make that happen after Wuhan.
Yeah, man. Let's first wait for the Wuhan to settle a
Wuhan
bit.
Clan.
This is too crazy. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Okay. Well, I really appreciate you coming. I really love talking with you. And I hope we can just do another one sometime later. So yeah, thanks for coming. And
it was a pleasure.
Yeah. And maybe we're going to see you better next time.
Awesome. Thank you, Kao. Take care.
See you, man.
Bye.
And that was the episode for today. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Hopefully, I will be able to have Chep around again sometime later. Maybe as a co-host sometime. We will see. But that should be the end of this podcast. But in the other news, if you guys haven't heard about it, on September 5 and 6 next month, there will be the Pleb Security Congress being held on Saturday and Sunday, starting 7 p.m. We're still looking for presenters on various topics, so presentations are still open for grabs. About 3 or 5 sets are still open. So that should be it for today. Thank you guys for tuning in. And if you guys are looking for any kind of swag to buy, visit bitpiggies.com for more sweet piggies to buy. Have a good one.